The following Sleep Better podcast is brought to you by the Sleep Forum. For more information, visit thesleepforum.com.
Hi, listeners. This is Ruth Marion at the Sleep Forum, and I am here today with Dr. Chris Winter. Dr. Winter is a neurologist, a sleep doctor, and an author. Hi, Dr. Winter. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It is a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
I've been dying to talk to you. I know, first of all, I'd love you to tell the audience and our listeners a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into sleep? Why'd you get into sleep?
Yeah, it was really accidental. It was a byproduct of, I guess, a program they had. So I went to the University of Virginia, and they had sort of a doctors could sign up for research help, and they would make a little ad. And I think a lot of individual like biology advisors or people who were pre-med advisors had this binder. And so basically it was just sort of a help wanted, you know, Craigslist before there was Craigslist kind of thing of, hey, I've got some frogs that need to be dissected in our lab. Do you want to do it? And we'll get your name on a research paper or something. And this, my biology advisor made me aware of it. And so I was kind of looking through it and saw that it was a guy doing research on sleep and pigs. And it just seemed really interesting and different. And I set up a time to meet with this guy. His name was Paul Surratt, who ran the Sleep Center at the University of Virginia for many years. And he was just this great guy and enthusiastic and supportive. And I started working for him, and it just kind of blossomed from there. But it was years before it ever became a career option. It was always just, this is fun. I like working with Paul. It's nice to, you know, I felt really important. You get a little temporary badge and you walk around the hospital and you're, you know, carrying pulse oximeters and things like that. So it was just, it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. And then he was also kind of, you know, teaching me about, you know, research and, but just, he just made it everything very fun. And that's how it started. It was completely accidental. I thought I would have been a pediatrician or a dermatologist or something like that. So things kind of took a start. And then, you know, the great thing about it is I've had the opportunity to mentor some people, one of whom's actually gone into sleep, and there's really nothing better than somebody to come to your clinic and like, I don't know what I'm doing, and maybe I could do some research for you. And then now this guy's like the sleep professor at Vanderbilt. So I love that. I think it's great. Actually, he's out in California. He was at Vanderbilt, then he went out to San Francisco.
Because you're sharing your passion, you know, you got into something that you really,
yeah,
obviously really love. And something new, you know, it was funny. I was reading this, that actually sleep didn't even become a topic until like almost 1970s. I mean, that's
absolutely crazy. And that was one of the things that was appealing. I remember Paul saying something like, I mean, you can be a cardiologist, but he goes, we pretty much understand the heart now. We've got the heart like down to the electrical cellular level. He said, but he goes, anything you think about in terms of sleep is wide open. And I remember saying to him one time, do you think sleep and travel impacts like how well a team performs, like a baseball team, if they travel across the country? He said, oh, I'm sure it does. He goes, that would be a great research project. And then I'll never forget, I expected him to say, maybe we should sit and meet and talk about doing that. He said, that would be a great research project. And then he kind of gave me a little beat, and then he turned around and walked away. So, like, I don't know, it's for you, but I don't have time for that.
Right.
But that was probably 93, 94. And in 2004, when I left my training and actually was a real, genuine, I've got an office kind of doctor, I did that study because it kind of jumped around in my head for 10 years. And that year, I think, was the year that the Montreal Expos actually played in Puerto Rico, which was Atlantic time. So for the first time in Major League Baseball history, there was baseball being played across 5 time zones. Yeah. And I thought, this is a sign from the gods that it's time to do this study because this will never happen again. But anyway, it was all because of Paul.
That's great. And then you did, you know, talking about travel, tell us about sleeping around with Chris, I'm sorry, did I get that right? That was right.
It's hard to, yeah, there's only so many puns that use the word sleep or sleeping one can So sleeping around with Dr. Chris Winter was, again, born out of this idea I had many, many years ago, that I was doing some writing for Huffington Post, and they were so amazingly supportive back in their early days. And like, oh, Chris, whatever you want to write about. I said, well, I've got this idea that I'll go sleep in weird places and then write articles about them and how they relate to our own sleep. So if I sleep in a haunted house, maybe that relates to anxiety about sleep. And if we sleep in an igloo, how temperature affects our sleep. And I always thought this would be a great television show. I mean, if you could make a TV show out of hoarders, I think this would be a really good one. And so I did this whole series called Sleeping Around, but then I was also talking to a lot of musical groups, and I started this thing called Sleeping with the Band. And that was about, you know, musical groups, but I was really interested in, you know, I think of their life as 24 hours. They, you know, do all this stuff. They get up on stage, they crush it, and then the show ends. And that's where I wanted my reporting. I know that's a strong word for what I was doing, I think. My writing to pick up there. Like, what happens between the curtain going down and you getting to that next city? And I was really interested in smaller groups. You know, they get in the bus and they're taking turns driving and stopping at the Sheets to get, you know, Red Bulls, and these incredible halls they would do. They would play Nashville, and then like the next night they're in Seattle or something crazy. It's chasing the shows.
Yes.
And so fast forward to just a couple of years ago, I was out in LA doing some shooting with Mattress Firm and sleep.com. So sleep.com is owned by Mattress Firm, and I do a lot of the scientific advising for sleep.com. And this woman named Sam Bennett was sitting there, and she's, you know, really high up in the ranks. And we were talking about sleep, and she said, what's your dream project? I said, well, a long time ago, I did these series of articles called Sleeping Around. And I thought they'd be a really good show. And within like a month, they had pulled together this massive budget, gotten these really talented people to think about it. And we filmed three episodes, which are available on sleep.com right now. So it was a dream come true to be able to do these things. And it's funny because I spent one night sleeping in a portaledge, that little teeny cot that they put on the side of the mountain. And I had done that many, many years ago. It took me 2 years to figure out somebody who would do it. So I found this guy named Arthur in Seneca Rocks, West Virginia. Wow. And he agreed to climb with me to the top of one of these rocks. He built a little portaledge, stuck me on it, and said, I'll come back and get you in the morning. So everybody's like, what was it like to sleep in the portaledge for the first time? It was my second time. And it was a lot more professionally handled than the first time, but it was awesome. And
I think I'd probably be like, you know, on my phone going, it's now 2 a.m. and I still can't sleep.
Well, the great thing was, so I was up there with this incredible woman named Sasha DeJulian. She's a professional climber for Red Bull, and we were both wearing things that tracked our sleep. I had the little Withings device on. I can't remember what she was wearing. And when we woke up, I said, I slept 6 hours and 7 minutes. How much did you sleep? She goes, I slept 6 hours and 6 minutes. So it's not in the episode, but I just want everybody to understand that I beat her. I won the sleep battle. So I can't have the mountain climber win, right? So anyway, no, it was really cool. And I think there's a lot to learn.
It was the Red Bull that got her.
It was the Red Bull. Yeah. She does, in fact, drink the Red Bulls. And so, but you know, it's interesting. And she made the point. She goes, imagine being in this situation where this is the kind of sleep you're getting every night on a 7-night ascent of some mountain. And, you know, that was the hardest climbing I've ever done. If it had been 2% harder, I could not have done it. I still, if you took me back to that same route, I'm not confident that I could climb it, even though I did it twice, actually. I had to do it twice for the filming of it. I felt like I was climbing the side of a blackboard. Like there was nothing to hold on to. She kept saying, trust your shoes, whatever the hell that means. Trust your shoes. So it was very hard, very, very hard climbing. And I can imagine getting to the stopping point, the sun goes down, and then you've got to do that the next day, that, you know, caffeine is absolutely a performance enhancing drug. And I think it has merit for that, you know, and when used the right way, God, it could save her life. So I am all for that coffee caffeine the next day if you're on the side of a mountain trying to do what she does, for no sure. Kidding. Maybe just mix in some water every now and then as I drink my caffeine.
Yeah, same here, you know? Yeah, exactly. Well, that's cool though. Like sleep, I like that whole like sleeping around. It's really interesting to think about how we sleep or don't sleep in different environments, right?
Absolutely. And just real quickly, we started a podcast many years ago called Sleeping Around. We did one episode or maybe two. I don't know that we ever even released. We didn't know how to release it. It was way back when. And the funny thing is, there's still a Twitter page for it. And it's the most bizarre. It's like a picture of myself and my wife for God knows what reason. Some little hand-drawn logo. So I like to give a shout out to the real, there is a Sleeping Around podcast, and the guys who do it down in Austin, Texas are true gentlemen. So do not confuse that rinky-dink thing that we tried to put together many, many years ago with their legitimate and fun podcast.
That sounds great. And then you wrote a book.
I did. Yeah. So, you know, I always tell people at some point, I think everybody in their career gets to this little inflection point of, I've got a fair amount of experience now, but I'm not one of those old timers that you meet at the convention that's way past their prime, but doesn't know it yet. Maybe I am and don't know it. We'll see. But anyway, at some point, I thought this would be a good time to kind of write down some thoughts that I have about sleep that I think might be unique or a little bit different. And so, you know, when I'd be sitting in a gate at an airport waiting for the flight or, you know, whatever, I'd spend a lot of time traveling. I found myself with a lot of downtime. I just opened up my computer, opened up a Word document and start typing, just, you know, write. And the document got to be big. It got to be so big. I've never really talked about this before, but when you write, and even though I've written two books, I don't really consider myself a writer. That's not really fair. But when you write a book, at some point, it goes from being a paper or a term paper you write in college to being a book. And I think that happens when you can't remember exactly what's in it. Do you know, like, and it's too big just to sit down and quickly read through. So anyway, it got to be massive, this document. And a guy named Jeff Kleinman out at Folio Literary called me up one day and said, I think I read something you wrote, probably one of those things I wrote in Huffington Post. He said, man, it was really good. You should write a book. I said, I think I have. And he said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I did my research. I didn't come across your book or anything, you know, whatever. I said, well, you wouldn't, because it's sitting here on my computer and I don't know what to do with it. And he said, well, send it to me. So I sent him this, you know, I have no idea what, I still have the document. I'm too scared to read it, whatever I sent to him. This is really good stuff. He said, I think I can sell this. And he did. He sold it to Penguin. So that was a weird experience in terms of most people, their process of writing a book is very different. They have a deal in place and they write the book. And that's what I did with my second book when I, you know, submitted a proposal and a sample chapter and, you know, whatever, and then wrote the book once it was done. But I encourage so many people, I think that's the right way to do it. But if you've got ideas and topics and passion for what you do, I don't think you're ever going to regret sitting down in quiet times and just writing. Right. And I'm really proud of that book. It's a lot of.
What's it called?
Yeah. Yeah. So it turned out well.
Dr. Chris, what's it called?
Oh, the book is called The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It, which was not the original title. The original title was Shut Up and Sleep. And I fought for that. And they're like, no, you're a doctor. It's not really a professional sort of thing. And I just went round and round about it. They said, I mean, at one, you know, they said, shut up is not good. Like it's kind of negative. You know, it's getting close to cursing, you know, kind of negative and whatnot. And I'll never forget when that book came out, I think around the same time, The Art of Not Giving an F came out. And I thought, Well, God, that book, that guy, I can't turn on the TV and not see that writer on, you know, whatever, and did okay with him putting that word in the title. So, and that came up again because when I wrote my second book, The Rested Child, I had all these other ideas for the name. And one of them, I just wanted to appeal to sort of parents who have teenagers. I didn't want this to be confused with a book to get your baby to go to sleep at night, which are perfectly fine books, but that's not entirely what this is. I like Tired AF. I saw that on a pillow one time, like you're supposed to buy it for your teen's room, you know, a little. And I sent that to my publisher and she said, no way. You're not calling your book Tired AF. So anyway, The Rested Child came around. So anyway, probably a mistake not to put the word sleep in the title, but it's turned out okay.
What's The Rested Child about?
So one of the problems with my first book was, when I sent it, they said, this is great. They said, this is a lot more than one book. You've got to cut it down a little bit because we're not going to write the 450, you know, Krieger Roth Dement sleep medicine principles textbook that we all had in our fellowship. So I had to cut some things out. The biggest regret of what I cut out of the first book was menopause. That was a massive mistake on my part, which is why it was the, believe, second episode of my podcast, because I had to quickly address that, or third, one or the other. But the other thing I cut out was everything about kids. I originally had it was going to be just a book about sleep from, you know, adults, kids. And they said, you probably should just take all the kids stuff out and make it a second book.
Right.
Which I'm glad I did. So the book is really about sleep disorders that affect kids of all ages. From the time they're born till they head off to college, you know, sort of cradle to cradle or crib to college. I can't remember what I called it. And it's interesting because even when I submitted the proposal to Penguin, a lot of the feedback I got was, you know, there's a lot of books about kids and sleep out there. And I said, oh, really? I'd like to know what they are because I'm really not aware of them. And they said, well, you know, like Baby Wise and you know, Healthy. And I said, no, this, what you're talking about are specifically books for young parents who've got a kid and they want to get them on some sort of sleeping schedule and believe mistakenly that if they don't do something right, their kid won't sleep, which is not true. Kids very good at sleep. It was sleeping before you ever met him. Right. So it was interesting. There was a lot of, I think, hesitancy about it. And then I wrote my first chapter about narcolepsy in kids and excessive sleepiness and those disorders and how they're missed all the time and how they're misdiagnosed as all kinds of things, depression and anxiety and ADD. And my editor was kind of like, oh my God, is this real? Like, this is a real thing you're writing about? Like, yeah, it's all over the place. And nobody knows anything about it, including the doctors that these kids are going to see.
That's right.
So that's really what I wanted to do, was I just wanted people to read it. If you're a parent of a kid of any age, and just understand what these sleep disorders look like, because they're very common. And when they're missed, I think the results are devastating.
You know, it's very frustrating to me because I actually live with somebody who has narcolepsy. Mm-hmm. And My daughter has narcolepsy and she went undiagnosed for 10 years.
That's the average.
Okay.
Think of a disorder where from the time you start having significant symptoms till the time a clinician tells you what you've got is a decade.
That's right.
A decade. I always tell people it's the opposite of erectile dysfunction.
Being told she was either staying up too late.
Oh, or, blame. It's your fault or the parents' fault.
Right. My daughter was also a young EMT. So it was, oh, well, you got a call in the night. So you're tired during the day because you were, you know, answering calls or whatever. It was always something, right?
Yeah. And that's a big part of it. To be perfectly blunt, she's a woman. And women get treated very differently in the medical system than men. It's like pat on your head. Well, you know, lots of people are tired.
Yeah.
You know, you need to get more sleep. There's so much blame, feelings of laziness, and this disorder unlike somebody, you know, missing a leg. We all know that. We see that. Oh my gosh, this person doesn't have a leg. Look at her out there surfing. That's incredible. Like, it's heroic. But when you look at somebody nodding off during an EMT shift, it's lazy. It's bad. It's fireable. You've got to do something about this. And this is every bit the disorder that all these other things are. And we don't think about it.
And these, they're those little signs, you know. Of course, hindsight is 20/20. So, sure. For example, I would never let her put the dishes away. She dropped, she had this.
Yes.
And I would call her just like clumsy.
Yeah. Oh, there's a guy who, my patient worked at Best Buy. I said, what do you do? He said, I'm a manager. I said, oh, wow, you're very young to be a manager. And he said, well, they made me manager because they liked me, but I kept dropping TV. So they're like, you got to get off the floor. I always thought that was so funny because exactly what she's referring to is with cataplexy, you suddenly lose that muscle tone. And it's not that Mr. Bean fall over most of the time. It's usually much more subtle.
Yeah. I'd say hand me the remote and she'd drop it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I would say, like,
I had a young woman call it morning hands because it happened more for her in the morning for some reason. And so as I was talking to her, she kept saying, I get up in morning hands. And I said, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You keep saying morning hands. What is that? She goes, morning hands, where you just drop things in the morning. I'm like, that's not a thing. It is for you, but like the rest of us are not dealing. We're dealing with morning breath, but not morning hands. That's not a real thing, dear. But it's amazing what people will normalize.
I know. I'm really very passionate about getting the message out to everyone, not to pay attention to their sleep and to pay attention to their daytime, how they feel in the day. You know, the sleep is fine, but how are you in the daytime? Are you tired? That's a sign.
I hope every one of your listeners hear that because in my second book, I wrote a chapter about good and bad sleepers. You're a parent, you've got three kids. Some are good sleepers, some are bad sleepers, whatever that means. How are you making that determination? How does an adult, when I see a patient, first thing I ask them, how can I help you? I'm not sleeping well. What does that mean to you? And for most people, not a good sleeper means it takes them a while to fall asleep or they wake up a few times during the night and have trouble getting back to sleep. That's what their metric is.
Right.
To me, the only metric, the best metric for sleep quality is exactly what you said. How do you feel during the day? You can go to bed and fall asleep in 20 seconds, never wake up during the night and fall asleep at a stoplight the next day. Conversely, it can take you 30 minutes to fall asleep. You wake up once to go to the bathroom, takes you 20 minutes to go back to sleep, and you can feel lovely the next day. So I just wish we paid much more attention to how we feel, our degree of sleepiness during the day, and less how fast can you fall asleep?
Right.
That I always call it speed to unconsciousness. That's kind of like trying to help people be better eaters, more nutritious in their dietary habits. And step number one is eat your dinner as fast as you can. Because if you're a fast eater, you've got nutrition licked. No, you don't. That doesn't mean anything. It just means you're shoving food in your face really fast. Why would that be confused with healthy eating habits? Why is fast asleep? In fact, really fast asleep can be a problem.
That's right.
I'm sure your daughter would tell you. And that's one of the things that you see with narcolepsy in kids is what parent doesn't want a child that naps every time you ask her to nap, asks to go to sleep at night and put herself to bed, never sleep, wakes up at 5 o'clock in the morning wanting pancakes on Sunday. Like they're kind of the dream sleeper until they start to get into school and some jobs and you realize, wow, their sleeping is really out of control.
I wonder how far back, I wonder if people are born, they say they don't really know the cause of narcolepsy or some other sleeping disorders, and they're trying to figure out why. And, there's been some studies on viruses that might have triggered, this orexin, whatever, that causes narcolepsy. It's when I look back, my daughter was like you said. I mean, she was the ideal sleeper. She'd sleep 12 hours at a time. when it came time to go to school, when she was five, I said, I had to call up somebody and said, what do I do? She wants to nap and she's five. You know, and it was, but you know, she didn't get diagnosed and she didn't actually show real signs. So she went on fine. It wasn't until 16.
Yeah.
When it actually, the really started to come out, you know.
Absolutely. That, yeah. You got to put a little pressure on the system to see it sometimes. And yeah. You can diagnose a narcolepsy patient very young. It's just what parents bringing you their seven-year-old who loves to sleep. It's usually that's awesome. I'm dealing with this other kid, my quote unquote bad sleeper, who fusses every time we put him down to take a nap. That gets the attention. So yeah, these people can easily hide for a decade.
You know, the other thing is the physicians, you know, the physicians need to pay more attention to sleep. And, you know, it's really interesting. Ever since I got into this, which was in 2018, every time I go to a physician, whether I go with for myself or with another loved one, you know, I always wait for the question, how's your sleep? And I don't know. You don't always get it, you know, and that really irritates me.
You know, it's interesting,
especially the pediatrician. You know, they shuff right over, like, how are they eating? Oh, does she eat, you know, this? Does she eat that? You know, and then, but aren't you going to ask about sleep?
They're not. And there's a lot of reasons why. Number one, I think 25% of pediatricians have never gotten any training on sleep whatsoever.
Right.
The average pediatrician, I think, has gotten somewhere between three hours in their lifetime. Right. I always joke that I think the average mattress firm employee over their career gets 200 hours or something. So there is no training. And as one pediatric residency director told me one time, he said, the only thing we know to do with sleep is to give a kid melatonin gummy bears. He said, so if you take away the melatonin gummy bears, you've taken away our entire playbook on sleep. So in an honest moment, he's basically saying, look, you're taking your child to a doctor who doesn't really know anything about that disorder. Now, of course, I'm generalizing, and I don't know anything about delivering a baby. So different doctors have their strengths, but I would argue that when you look at the complaints that individuals come to primary care doctors with, it's a real problem that we're not training those individuals on disorders of excessive sleepiness and also meaningful treatments for insomnia. It's sort of the opposite. I can't sleep. All I do is sleep.
Right.
And so it's interesting, for my entire career, I've been trying to get in front of doctors and sort of figure this out. And this year, when The Rested Child came out, yeah, I contacted a couple bigger groups and said, I'd love to, when you get all of your pediatricians together for the big conference in San Antonio, I'd love to talk to them. I think we could really help them create a flow chart of how to deal with these things and recognize them. It's like crickets. But so I just went to school nurses, school counselors, individuals who are parents, parent groups, just because if we can create advocacy. So if the parent understands that, okay, well, I went to my pediatrician, they don't even ask about sleep. And I get it, because what, you got to see a patient every 7 minutes to make a pediatric practice work in this current insurance climate. I mean, I get it, but that's such an important thing. And people are looking to better help than just give them a melatonin gummy bear. I mean, the melatonin gummy bear prescriptions are just kind of out of control right now.
What do you think about that?
It's funny. My next episode of my podcast is on hypersomnia, and I'm gearing up for the melatonin one. Here, in a nutshell, what I think about melatonin is it's fine. Why are you using it? Oh, you're using it because you've tried a couple of different medications for an individual who's having REM behavior disorder, and now you're going to try this to see if you can get this punching and kicking that's injuring a patient or a bed partner under better control. Great. Are you just using it as a sleeping pill? My kid gets in bed, takes him a while to fall asleep. I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, can't get back to sleep. So the use of melatonin as a sleeping pill is absurd. It doesn't make any sense. And we're just missing the point. So I have no trouble with melatonin. It's the way we deploy it. It should be a pretty niche sort of drug, but it's not. It's let's give it to everybody. Why? Because it's cheap. It's relatively safe, and it'd be hard to hurt somebody with it. That's why it's very appealing to a pediatrician. I can do something, in quotes, without really doing anything. So especially when you're looking at, there was a study that came out not too long ago that looked at a bunch of melatonin brands, and they tested them for melatonin and to see what's in them. I mean, it was, let me tell you something, what's on the label has very little to do with what you're putting in your child's mouth or your own mouth. And so again, if you're saying, look, I travel back and forth to Brussels for my work, and I use that to really help with my jet lag. Oh, great.
Right.
You know how many times somebody's told me that who takes melatonin in the last 6 months? One.
Right.
How many times people have taken, oh, I just take it because I can't sleep? A million. Wow. And that's what I have a problem with.
Wow, that's serious. That's serious. You know,
it is.
I heard that in the UK. I was speaking with somebody else on another podcast. They told me that they can't get melatonin in the UK. Like it's a prescription.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it should be. I mean, it's.
I agree. I just don't think, I mean, it's fun to explore, not only with patients and parents. I love asking doctors, oh, I see you use melatonin with this patient. What are you using it for? What's your diagnosis? They can't even come up with a diagnosis. Do you know how it works? Do you know what it's doing? Like, how do you regulate it? They don't know anything. They don't know anything. So. I'm not going to take your appendix out because I don't know how to do it. I don't know anything about that. I kind of think I do. I think it's about right here. And it's green in every textbook I've ever seen.
It's green. So,
looking around for something that's green, you know. But come on. Like, it's... Anyway, yeah.
Like wouldn't... Like, if, I'm wondering if melatonin, taking melatonin would suppress your body.
There's thoughts that it could, especially when people start taking massive doses of it. I always tell people... Melatonin is not a sleeping aid. It's a timing aid. It's designed to help regulate not only the timing of your sleep. People think of circadian rhythm and sleep as being joined. Yes, it is. But your sleep is just an outward expression of your circadian rhythm. There are countless other things that are beholden to that rhythm too that we don't know. Like, when are you making a certain hormone or digestive enzyme? It's not random. Mm-hmm. It's you're going to excrete this at this time every day. Your body temperature will rise and fall in this pattern. You'll be good at athletics at this time of day. You're terrible at athletics at this time of day. Everything has a peak and a valley. And that's what the circadian rhythm is governing. And melatonin is key to that because it's allowing us to utilize this constant light, dark source of 24 hours and regulate that. So why would we be giving a child who's 6 years old or 4 years old melatonin when they go to bed and creating another false signal of melatonin increase, a dim light melatonin onset at 10 o'clock when you just had one at 7 o'clock when the sun went down? Like, my guess is there is consequence to that. And if you explain that to a parent, I've never talked to a parent about melatonin and they say, oh yeah, I know all that because my doctor explained it to me. There was zero explanation. It was, my child goes to bed at this time. He doesn't fall asleep right away. How can I knock him out? That's the dialogue. And here's the melatonin.
That's crazy stuff.
It is. It is. Like, did you talk about his sleep and what might be causing it? How old is your child? How much sleep opportunity are you giving him during the day? Oh, wow. He's in bed 13 hours and he takes 2 2-hour naps. That's a lot of sleep for a kid that age. Can we talk about maybe your expectation of sleep is a little bit different than his ability to deliver on. Like, there's none of that dialogue. Maybe there's just no time, but my guess is it's time and expertise vacuum that we're talking about here.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, two things that came to mind is that number one, people need to take control of their own health. You know, a lot, we were talking about doctors not asking the right questions. You know, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing and you're doing what you're doing. It's because the general population wants to take control. They want to know what's going on with their own bodies and their own health. I mean, if they want to, they can. Let's put it that way. Not everybody wants to. Some people just want to take a pill or go to a doctor and ask the doctor.
Of course they do.
Other people, though, a lot of other people are interested in being more educated on what's going on with our bodies and what we're putting into our bodies and how it's affecting us. And, you know, it's funny you talked about, you know, the parents, you know, the sleep hygiene is the first place to start. I mean, is the, you know, and those are the kind of questions that I think, or the kinds of information that I think parents need to get, You know,
yeah.
Before you give melatonin, is your room dark? Is it cool? Is the child had exercise all day? What did they eat? Did they eat chocolate at 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock? And then you try to put them to bed. I mean, there's just so many other factors that go into getting good sleep before taking something like melatonin or anything for that matter. But I think it starts with, you know, people understanding it themselves.
Yes, and it, always.
And it also starts with, you know, the physicians learning more about it. And I just love that this topic's getting out there, you know.
Absolutely. It's all information. The doctor's job is not to tell you what to do or to give you a pill. You and your doctor have entered into a partnership, and the partnership is an exchange of information. I'm giving you some scientific knowledge you may not have, but you're also giving me information about yourself and your child that I don't have. So it's two ways. And so I tell patients all the time, and this applies to me, if you don't feel like there's good relationship there with your clinician, find another one. Any of my patients who are listening, who feel like Chris is not listening to me and giving me the information that I need, I mean, I'm happy to find you a different doctor that's smarter than I am. It's not hard. You know what I mean? Like, so everybody, not everybody's cup of tea. That's fine. Find somebody who's listening to you and not just saying, oh, kids are tired. Kids sometimes fall asleep. Like, I know, of course, you know, kids sometimes fall asleep, but my kid falls asleep everywhere.
Right.
So hear what I'm saying. And if you don't know the answer, and this is something I tell doctors all the time, it is okay not to know the answer.
Right.
God knows I don't know the answer to lots of things. It is not okay to not push a patient in the direction of someone who you think does have that answer.
Exactly.
That is our responsibility. And I was talking to Dave Rye one time, who's this fantastic researcher and sleep doctor down at Emory University, where I did my medical school. And we were talking about that, and somehow it came up. He goes, it's tough sometimes, Chris, when the buck stops with you, meaning that it was funny, literally saying, I'm the smartest person about sleep and this topic you'll ever meet. So if I don't know the answer, we're done here. Like, which is probably true. He is that smart for sure.
But you know what's nice?
Hello, like, Dave.
It's nice to go to your primary. I mean, I'm lucky. I have a good one. And if he doesn't, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to your primary and asking, or your doctor or whatever, and asking questions about things that you hear. So, you know, you're listening to this podcast and you heard about a little bit about melatonin. If it's a question, ask your doctor. If they don't, and it, you know, my primary honestly is wonderful. If he doesn't know the answer, he's looking it up, or he's sending me where I need to go. And that's why I love him so much.
Mine is exactly the same way. Hello, Bill Fox.
So if you're listening to this podcast, you know, make sure you talk to your primary. And like Chris said, if they're not answering your question, maybe find somebody else.
Absolutely. You know? That's the fun part of medicine.
Yep.
It really is the challenging patient, the person that I just said it to somebody the other day. I'm going to get back to you on this. I need to look a few things up because I've never been asked that question before. So that's my growth now. Now I get to arm myself with some information for the next time that I get asked this question, which I guess on average will be 20 years from now, you know, because I've never heard this before. So I think those things are great. And if you have a doctor who's kind of shying away from that challenge or is defensive about it, doctors have this very weird thing that when they're confronted sometimes with things they don't know, they're running away from it rather than towards it. And I think fatigue and sleepiness is definitely one of those things. Chronic pain. There's a certain things that I think we shy away from as doctors rather than embracing them because they're challenging. You know, so anyway, I think that you always want a doctor who's kind of up for that.
Ego's getting low.
It's all ego, I think. Okay. And I think that one of the things that can be extremely liberating is understanding as a doctor or a clinician or what, we don't know that much. And whatever that fund of knowledge is that we do know, Chris Winter knows like a fifth of that. So when you let go of this pretense that I've got all the answers, I've got some experience, which is very important because, you know, doctors are nothing but pattern generating recognizers. Oh, I've seen that pattern of things before. but we don't know everything. And so again, it's that partnership of how can we figure it out together? Like, this is kind of fun, isn't it? Like, if it's not enchanting to you, why did you go into medicine? So you can wear a white coat around and be called doctor this or, you know, professor that. I mean, that gets old, man. It gets really old. I like Chris. I always like that name.
That's great. What a wonderful podcast this has been. What do you have coming up? What are you doing? What are you working on now?
Yeah. So I just about 2 months ago started my own podcast. It's called Sleep Unplugged with Dr. Chris Winter. Again, many years ago, thought about doing it and just kind of backed away from it because I just thought I don't have time. I don't have time to arrange guests like you know, people do. I just felt like that would be hard. I've caused so much distress to podcast hosts over the years. I feel like I owe them all an apology. You know, oh, I'm sorry, I got to cancel all of a sudden because this thing, yeah. You know, team, you know, whatever. But my daughter, who I'll give a shout out to, was really the reason why I did it. She said, look, I listened to a podcast of some psychologist who's been practicing for 30 years. He comes in, he sits down, he lets his dogs out. He talks for 30 minutes. He's done. He doesn't edit it. There's no theme music. And she said, I love it because he's got 30 years of experience. And I just love to hear him talk from this position of knowledge. And it just so happens, I started in sleep, I think in 92 with Paul Surratt, and it's been 30 years. And I said, well, yeah, I can do that. And she said, you should just try it. And so we put a couple episodes out and it's been really popular. Like I just, you know, and so it's fun because I do a lot of stuff in media, but a lot of times it is not exactly what I want to talk about. And so it's just really liberating to be able to sit down and for 30 minutes, I'm not constrained by anything. I can just, you know, and hopefully that resonates with people. So like I said, this upcoming Monday, we'll release our hypersomnia in children. I want to talk specifically about that. And it's great. We'll talk for 30 minutes and I'm sure I will say just a tiny amount of what I want to say about the topic and we'll revisit at some point in the future. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm begrudgingly telling my daughter that she was right, that I thought this would be a big pain in my butt, but it's actually been wonderful. So that's coming up. Some tentative plans maybe to write a third book, but not any right now. I work with a bunch of sports teams and a lot of work going on with those guys right now. And so far doing really well, the teams that we work with. So that's good. I always like my teams do well when they're in last place. I tend to ignore them and pretend like I'm not associated with them. I'm kidding. That's not true at all. I actually like working with the worst teams. You know, whenever somebody calls me up and says, yeah, we won the World Series 3 years in a row or whatever, like, can you help us out? I always feel like, I don't want to do that because I can only make you worse. You're already at the top. Like when the United States women's soccer team called me, I'm like, this is a losing proposition because either right. You'll keep doing well, in which case everybody's good. Like, well, you didn't do anything because they're already doing well, or they start doing worse, in which case it's because of the pillows you recommended or some, you know, lavender spray you were telling everybody to use. So no, I think they're lovely and it's always fun to see sleep in action. If you make somebody sleep better, anybody's, you know, an accountant, a school teacher, whatever, I think they perform better. But with athletes, it's fun because you can measure that. So that's always exciting. And yeah, our third episode of Sleeping Around just came out where I spent 24 hours with the Fort Worth Fire Department. And I've already apologized once, but in my podcast, I'd mentioned that and I called them the Dallas Fort Worth Fire Department. And let me tell you something. When you're in Fort Worth, you refer to nothing except the airport as the Dallas Fort Worth anything. So I said that on the podcast and one of my stipulations for the podcast is I'm not editing it. Whatever is on the podcast for that 30 minutes goes out. So I'll apologize once again to those awesome people at the Fort Worth Fire Department, Station 17. You are Fort Worth to the bone. Forget Dallas. Nobody cares about Dallas. It's all Fort Worth all the time. They're the busiest fire department in the United States, I think. Somebody told me that's why we chose them. So they were awesome. And I did get to slide down the pole, which was great.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There were actually three poles in the fire station. And so depending on the alarm you heard, you had to choose the right pole because it put you next to the door of the vehicle you would be going out in.
Oh, I didn't.
So that was like an added stress, like, okay, that's the middle pole sound. And they said, you can come along with any ride you want.
Right.
But if you're not there when we pull out, we're not waiting for you. So that was like the game all night long. Like, could I be the first one down the, you know, the pole or whatever?
That's great. Yeah.
Great, great group of people.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah,
I like that. Well, if you ever go sleeping around anywhere and you want to invite me, I'll come with you.
There you go. Like, yeah, I'll put it on the list. Well, if people want any more information about me, my Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is all Dr. Chris Winter. So at DrChrisWinter at Dr. Chris Winter. And so appreciate the follow. Reach out with any DMs, comments about the shows, future ideas, criticisms. We'll take anything.
That's awesome. I want to thank you. I know that, like, first of all, you have so much information to share, and I want to thank you for sharing it with the general population. I bet you know, if we reach one person with this podcast that we help, we've done a great job.
That's how, you know, I feel too. That's how you measure it, isn't it?
We just need to, you know, and if we reach more than that's even better, but you know, I just think you're doing wonderful work. Thank you.
And I'll say one more thing. And if that one person can ask somebody today in their life, a coworker, a family member, how's your sleep been? And engage in that dialogue. I always tell people, we just need to elevate the culture of sleep in this country from sleep is for the weak, sleep is for the lazy, to we all do it. And it's a huge part of our, and we need to talk about it like nutrition and exercise, that it should be something that we're talking about all the time and expressing our views about it and sharing how our own sleep looks. Because when we do, I think it makes it a lot easier for people to understand they may have a problem.
Good point. Good, really good point. Anyway, thanks again.
You're welcome.
I'm going to make sure to post, you know, your information on this podcast. And I can't wait to talk to you again.
Sounds good. Anytime.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Sleep well.
Yeah, sleep well, everybody.
This Sleep Better podcast was brought to you by the Sleep Forum. For more information, visit thesleepforum.com.